I do think we'd all like to see those involved in corruption in South Africa face the full might of the law. In practical terms, however, it's unlikely. Our national prosecuting authority is a shadow of its former self. The burden of proof and the insufficient justice system means that those with very deep pockets, as we have seen for the last, I don't know, years, are able to confound justice, in some cases, indefinitely. So there's got to be a better way of getting a form of justice in a way that avoids court processes and speeds up some form of public accountability that may be as effective and a deterrent into the future as jail time. Dr. Rajabedian, Chief Executive at Pan African Advisory Services. I'm sure you've seen the proposals from the National Prosecuting Authority, Raj. They are broadly in line with my introduction. What's your view?
Thanks very much, Bruce, and greetings to our listeners. My view is that clearly the right move, and provided the NPA creates the capacity to assess the quantum of damage, not the amount that such companies have stolen through corrupt practices, but also the collateral damage that they've done to the economy, to the society, to the democratic dispensation and institutions of governance. As long as that is fairly assessed, then it may be all in all the best that the NPA can do, given its capacity, given the timeline, and so on and so forth. And very importantly, send a very important and immediate message to the business community and those who are thinking of doing malfeasance and corruption that there is no way that can get away with it. Because as you said, alternatively is going litigation, capacity on the one side, deep pocket of the corrupt on the other, and the fact that the society becomes more and more frustrated and the economy becomes more and more, the business practices become more and more corrupt.
In an environment where the corruption has been so devastating, it's not the most desirable outcome. We'd love to see the corrupt in orange overalls and being paraded off to jail. It's just not, unfortunately, practical because of the dismantling of the prosecutorial system post the Polokwane conference of the ANC, was it 2008?
I think that's only one half of the reason. The other half is that there isn't sufficient political will not to talk about it, but to do something about it. If they had sufficient political spine and political determination, there are ways and means within the existing legislative environment to bring to account those who we know have been party to this corruption. But it has to be done both at the political level as well as at the corporate level and business level.
Absolutely on both. The TRC process was massively criticized. Of course it was. This has got to be more far-reaching and have greater consequences, of course. The TRC promised absolution for full disclosure. This can't be absolution. This has to have at least a financial consequence. This has to have a public naming and shaming consequence attached to it as well, surely.
Of course, we've already seen McKinsey's name and shamed, and they've paid about just below $1 billion. ABNB, the Swiss company, has paid $2.5 billion. And this, as you know, and I'm on record to say, this is a fraction, a small fraction of what they should have compensated South Africa. But be as it may, it's not as if these companies or some companies haven't been named and shamed, and they have at least agreed to pay certain amounts, as small as it might have been. It's the fact that it's not sufficient. It's that it's not wide enough, deep enough. They pay their whatever they have to pay, and they continue the practices in a far more nuanced way. So part of this alternative resolution, not absolution, but a resolution of the issue, has to be two complementary pieces. One is to quantify the damage caused, it's not just the money stolen, but also some kind of ethical charter that they must sign that they will not engage in such practices and disclose those executives in these organizations who have been central to malpractice, malfeasance, and the promotion of corrupt practices. If disclosure is not made, if, for example, ABNB pays 2.5 billion rand, all that it tells me is that, well, they provided for it. They are taking insurance on it. It doesn't cost any of them. Their executives continue business as usual, and next time they do it a little bit more sophisticated way. The same way with McKenzie guys. McKenzie guys did the corruption here. He was changed or transferred from Johannesburg to London. He does the same thing in different jurisdictions. That is not good enough.
And there's also going to be a really clear framework, and I think Shamila Batoya is probably going to talk to this tomorrow, where she's going to be making public statements around this. But a period, where there's got to be a clear choice between criminal activity that cannot be excused, that must be prosecuted, and some individuals very clearly need to go to jail, but also the power to prosecutors to choose with whom they should engage and who they should prosecute. And not everybody should have a get-out-of-jail-free card on this, I would think.
Absolutely, and that is where the disclosure comes in. That is where if the name of executives, chairman, whoever, who were the operatives within these entities, within these corporates, who were driving the process, they need to come out and be named, and then through that we can then take the lead as to who were their collaborators, either in the cabinet or in various government departments or various SOEs. That disclosure is an important element of cleaning the corrupted body of the business.
Then the idea that there should also be a period of, I don't know, corporate abstinence, if you like, where you simply may not do business. If you've been corrupt in the public sector, we've seen attempts at this and appeals against the process in South Africa in terms of people being banned from doing business for a period of time with the public sector, even with some private sector players perhaps into the future. Is that become feasible? Is it global best practice? Is it something that we should be implementing as possibly the ultimate deterrent, that if you run the risk of not being able to do future contracts, that may ultimately force better behavior?
That depends on, in my view, that we cannot prohibit businesses or force them to, if you like, bankruptcy. We can fine them for their malpractices. If they agree and we get a fair compensation for the damages caused and money is stolen, as well as they undertaking that they will expunge their or clean up their sort of corrupt executives and undertake to comply with certain good ethical practices, that's the best we can do. Otherwise, we're going to go a bit of a overreach, trying to punish them and make them go corrupt, bankrupt. And that would then create collateral dilemmas for businesses who need their services. A good example would be SAP, the software company. If you want them to stop, then all the companies that are using their
good point. Computer says no. And that would be a disaster. Dr. Iraj Abedian, thank you. Chief Executive at Pan African Investments and Research Services this evening on The Money Show. Very valuable contribution. You'll remember Iraj Abedian was one of the most outspoken critics, of course, of the issues around state capture, gave up lucrative board positions, put his own name into the fray as somebody who went this far and no further. There's no way that, I'm willing to countenance this and I'm willing to make personal sacrifice for it. So a very valuable contribution from him.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield was brought to you by Absa Corporate and Investment Banking, bringing you award-winning trade and working capital funding solutions to unlock the full potential of your business story. Absa is a registered FSP.